The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, let's have some fun. It's time for a numbers game here this Thursday, February 20th edition of the show alongside Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Serrallo taking you through your morning. We've got a couple great guests coming on the show later on. VSiN's own Zach Cohen going to break down a locked and loaded NBA slate as the rest of the association returns to action. We had the makeup game last night, Charlotte Lakers. We'll dive into that just momentarily here, Kelly. And then Mike Somich going to join the program here in a little bit as well. Hour two, we'll break down USA versus Canada tonight and more with Mike here on the show. Kelly, how you doing, my man? And how did you enjoy that little, we'll call it the appetizer to tonight's NBA slate?
Yeah, it was okay. It was
pretty underwhelming.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty underwhelming. Yeah, it was a Hornets Lakers game. It was close at the end. If you wanted to see LeBron brick some threes at the end, you got all that. But yeah, a big day. NBA back with a full card tonight. Can't wait for that. Got to take my little mental vacation from late night NBA is off. Now it's time for some long nights again and this hockey game, man.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had such a long stretch of our best bets at the end where you just don't really have a best bet often. I mean, but you know what though? It's important to do that as opposed to forcing it, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like when your niche and your specialty is not in action. That would be like me betting on golf. Mm-hmm. There's just no need to force it. Instead, I just might take Dave's advice from the end of VSiN by the Books, where he sounded like he took a long shot on the Italian.
Manassero, yep. I was going to text you yesterday. I mean, like, you could go Francesco Molinari and grab one of the...
Is Molinari in Mexico?
Yeah, he's in the field. Okay. Yeah, you could actually get a major champion who's Italian in the field.
Because
yeah.
He was a... I mean, when I was looking at the leaderboard on DraftKings yesterday, I did not see his name. I either missed it or he was way down there.
Way down, Joe. Yeah. Way down.
The only guy I saw that I recognized was Batia there at the top of the leaderboard. This Lakers Hornets game, Charlotte gets there 100-97 at the Staples Center or Crypto Arena, whatever you want to call it. LA started pretty hot, had a 7-point lead after the first, had an 11-point lead at the half, despite, you know, a really underwhelming, I would say bad first half out of Luka in this one. How concerned are you? Because I know it's early. And I don't want to be alarmist and I don't want to be a sensationalist. How concerned are you about maybe the chemistry between LeBron and Luka?
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. It's too early. I think there's nothing to draw from that. I think the early returns I'd like to see Luka Doncic be more involved and aggressive. However, he's kind of been playing under minutes restrictions and stuff like that until really last night. But even then, he had to come off court at different times for defense. I think going forward, that's something to watch, Joe. But I think from what we've seen so far, that's not something we should make a big deal out of. Because if you're saying LeBron's good to go on his normal minutes and your other guy's got to be playing limited minutes, it makes sense that LeBron's going to be kind of running the show for the most part. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops over the next couple weeks, which are some of the biggest couple weeks of the NBA season. Is my belief. Like, it is, yes, games are weird coming out of the All-Star break and warning for bettors out there. Like, this is a ratcheted downtime a little bit like heading into the All-Star break. You just don't know where guys' heads are at. Some are just coming off vacation. And then there's the complete opposite of that too. This is also some of the time where teams really get to practice together and really get to, you know, have regular days of practice, Joe, that they haven't had since the preseason because you're mixing in games all the time and just worrying about shoot-arounds, not getting that much practice time in. So it's really, I think it's really tough gambling out on these games coming out of the All-Star break, not knowing exactly where different players, different teams are at with that stuff. But the Lakers... Look, the same problems that we thought they were going to have showed up last night. The bigs, Charlotte's bigs, they had a problem with. Yes, I guess it was a Mark Williams revenge game or something to that factor. But, you know, he had 9 rebounds. Talking about Nurkic off the bench with 8 rebounds in only 18 minutes. It's pretty clear that they're struggling from the look, you just look at team rebounding. Sure, they out-rebounded Charlotte. But from those easy boards to get inside from the bigs, they're struggling with. So, yeah, we'll have to see how this team handles things going forward. You'd like to see that chemistry develop. But I think some of the problems that they have from a roster-building standpoint are just going to be issues throughout the season.
Now, you mentioned it during the All-Star break, the idea of the Lakers dropping down into the play-in tournament. Did you get to the counter on that? Because it's shorter now than when you brought it up after just this one loss there on the division. Where is it? The Clippers were, I believe, plus 280 to win the division, now plus 240. And then for the Lakers to make the play-in, that was, I believe, closer to 3-1, now closer to 2-1, just after one game.
Yeah, it's a bad loss to Charlotte. I mean, this is a Charlotte team that is...
especially at home.
Yeah, at home, losing to one of the worst teams in the NBA. I mean, it is, like, Charlotte's healthier. This was a team I was a little bit higher on than most at the beginning of the season when they were healthy, but you did see basically their full complement of weapons. Last night, LaMelo Ball was back out there with Bridges. You had Mark Williams in the lineup. After it looked like they were going to lose him. So this is one of the stronger Charlotte, lineups that you're going to face during the season.
I'll tell you, switching over to the college hoops side of things last night quickly, that Alabama-Missouri game, I don't know how locked into that you were.
I watched most of the first half.
Alabama puts up 98 points, loses by double digits.
Yeah.
This team's defense, they're a team, and you know, look, I've said it on this program before. I've said it on my show on Cashing Out before. I usually try to fade Nate Oates in big games and big situations. And this year, I was getting there with Bama. This was the year that I was thinking I might, when March rolls around, and now we're, you know, under a month's time away from Selection Sunday, about 3 weeks or so away, I might be able to get there on circling Bama's name at the end of things in early April. No shot with their defense. I mean, they can score with anyone. 98 points. You should never lose a college basketball game in regulation when you score 98 points, let alone to lose it by double digits. I mean, you know, at the end of things, Missouri was getting up more shots in volume than Bama was for the most part earlier in the game. By the end of things, Bama ended up getting more shots. That's what they do. They shoot in volume. They average about 9 more field goal attempts per game than their opponent. Missouri shot over 60% from the floor, though. I mean, the efficiency was off the charts. And free throws, I mentioned yesterday during the show how both of these teams get to the line better than anyone in the SEC, about 27 times per game. Bama got there 21 times. Mizzou got there 47 times. You allowed damn near 50 free throw attempts. And they only shot about 2/3. Bama shot at a much higher clip from the free throw line.
You can't let someone get to the line that much, though. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. 47-21. That's the difference in the game right there, a 12-point loss for Bama. You know, we fell for the trap. It was a bit of a fishy line, a team like Alabama being an underdog in that spot, and they were so good as underdogs this year, 4-0 against the number as dogs, 3-0 against the number coming off a straight-up loss at the time. Everything seemed a little fishy about that. I thought Bama would have too much offensively. You know, I'll tell you the truth, though, Kelly. If we go back in time and you tell me before the game, hey, Joe, Alabama's going to score 98 points in this one in regulation, are you taking them? I'd have said yes.
Yeah.
Even an atrocious defense, I thought would be better than allowing 110 in a college
year. Total set at 173.5. Yeah, you're taking, you said, yeah, I'll take 98 points, no problem.
Right? Absolutely. Kentucky, I don't know where that one closed because there was some line movement there, but JVT came on, said if it got to 3.5, he would take it. And whether you got 3.5, whether you got 5.5, 82-61 the final. It was a neck and neck first half, 41-40 Kentucky. And then in the second half, they put up 41 Vandy. Only put up 21. A little reminiscent there of the A&M Mississippi State game from the night before, where it's a 1-point game at the break, and then the home team just absolutely blows the away team out of the water. Second half, more SEC action. Auburn wins, doesn't cover. And, you know, we were talking about that number against Arkansas yesterday. It was, what, it got up to 17 points? A massive number. They win by 7, so Coach Cal's Razorbacks cover. And then St. John's, a game that I was afraid to get there. I believe what Jim Root gave it out yesterday. Yep, the Johnny's minus 12.5. And I thought it was a big number. Road spot coming off a big win against Creighton. Emotional win over the weekend. Well, Patino's Johnny's just absolutely blew DePaul out. 82-58. The top 10 St. John's Red Storm just keep on winning. 14-2 in Big East play. Kelly, any inclination to take this team come March?
Man, they have to look good. The couple times I've seen them, and I watched a little bit of that game last night, too, they were looking dang good. So, something I could be interested in. And like you said, the Patino speeches fire me up. So,
yeah, those speeches were incredible. And, you know, look, I know that there's no secret. St. John's offensively a little challenged, right? 29% from three, at least, before that DePaul game. But we did mention it yesterday. There have been two teams in the last 15 years to make the Final Four shooting less than 33% from three. and they were two Rick Pitino-led Louisville teams.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the I forgot about that stat from yesterday. In today's world of basketball, either at the college or NBA level, I don't know if I could back a team shooting that. 29% from three. I really don't think I can.
Look, a lot of this has to do with the draw. They are plus 650 to make the Final Four. So that is, I mean, you know, that's the criteria for that Pitino thing. So
the other one is you have to go through all these team schedules and everything throughout the year, right? And it's I think they're probably a good example of how much of your regular season schedule was going to be that much lighter than what you're facing in the NCAA tournament, right? And while you might say, Kelly, everybody faces a tougher schedule in the NCAA tournament. Well, I don't like the SEC teams might not agree with that.
Right.
Or whatever they've played throughout conference play is pretty comparable to what they're going to get the first, few rounds of the NCAA tournament. That might not exactly be the case with St. John's. So you might be able to live on shooting 29% from three for most of the regular season. As soon as you get down in a game of the NCAA tournament, though, and you need points, that becomes a problem.
You know what really stands out when I look at the St. John's team's resume, though? And I know close losses are still losses, but all of their losses have been by three or less. All four of their losses. I mean, Baylor.
So you're telling me one made three could make a difference?
I'm telling you, yeah. Baylor, 1 point. Georgia, which is not a great loss, but SEC team.
Yeah.
3 point loss on a neutral down at one of those preseason tournaments. Creighton by a point at Creighton. At Villanova by two. You look at some of these wins. I mean, they blew out a really good New Mexico team by 15. Beat Kansas State, who's now beating everyone, by 17. Obviously, the conference wins like UConn and Creighton and Marquette. I might be able to get there on my Johnnies plus 650 to make the Final Four the way that they've been playing. We'll dive into tonight's NBA slate. Up next, it's a numbers game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirola.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to know where the money is really going? Only VSiN gives you exclusive access to betting splits from Circa Sportsbook and DraftKings, two of the most respected books in the industry. Unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings, giving you insight to where the sharp action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from the pros, while DraftKings provides a broader market perspective. That means you're getting the real action, not just public money, but the kind of wagers that move lines. See the percentage of bets versus the percentage of handle on every game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. Get VSiN's exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. As the numbers game continues alongside Kelly Bidlin, Joe Cirola here. Make sure you get involved with the program. Tweet at the show at Kelly Bidlin, at the Joe Cirola. For myself, of course, at VSiN Live across all socials. Kelly, we've got some tweets to get going.
Yeah, this is a good one. Banshees of Atlantic City, always a great listener. Appreciate you tweeting this in. Tweeted, hey, you might remember last season post-All-Star break, there was a large unexplained drop in number of fouls being called, lower scores. No idea if we'll see that again, but in last night's game, there were only 29 free throws taken. I'm interested to get Zach's thoughts on. I cannot imagine with the blowback the NBA got last year after it was kind of figured out that there was a change in officiating and directive to the officials to change how they were calling some games, and that kind of went unannounced to the public. I doubt there's going to be anything like that this year, but I can't rule it out because it absolutely did happen last year, and it cost me some bets. It sure felt like the winning started to slow down this time of year. So something to at least be aware of. I'm very glad you tweeted that in, Banshees. And before we get to Zach, just one more. This is breaking news coming down right now. NBA. Milwaukee Bucks forward Bobby Porter suspended 25 games for violating the league's anti-drug policy.
Wow.
Released a lengthy statement. I haven't gotten to the end of it, but to sum it up, he basically took the wrong painkiller, Joe. So, you know, be careful out there. Make sure you take
it. I hate when that happens, right?
Never
goes well for me, Kelly. Always make sure you're taking the right painkiller.
That's right, yeah.
Let's talk painkillers and officials calling fouls with VSiN senior editor now, Zach Cohen, on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on Twitter at BettingOnX. Zach, what are your thoughts about that tweet when it comes to the fouls that were called last year post All-Star break? What do you expect this year?
Yeah, so I'm with Kelly. I don't think we're going to see a major change this year. I think last year, you know, whether you liked it or not, the reason that they did change the officiating was because there was a slew of like 70-point performances from guys like Luka Doncic and Devin Booker, and people, you know, were berating the league, you know, like they always do, about the lack of defense being played and, you know, the just ridiculous offensive performances.
All right, Zach, I think next segment, Joe and I are going to get to the exciting game of done or not done yet when it comes to NBA awards. I'm going to bring in a team for this based off that Bobby Portis news. Milwaukee Bucks, done or not done yet?
I think they're done. I just have not been a big believer in the depth of this team for a while now. And I think that losing Portis, a guy that, you know, gives you instant offense off the bench, is going to be a blow to them. I did not like, you know, the Chris Middleton trade that they made. I know that he did not look good, you know, the first portion of the season, but I do think they didn't really give him a lot of time to come back off that double ankle surgery. I think he's going to be looking a lot better in a couple of weeks and maybe next season. And I just think this is a team trending in the wrong direction in a bad way.
Yeah.
Zach, speaking of teams trending in the wrong direction, Philadelphia 20-34 on the year. They've got that top six protected pick. Some people think because of it, they might just go full tank mode now post All-Star break. They're hosting Boston, catching 7.5. They just lost to Boston by 8 not too long ago in their most recent meeting. What are you on in this contest?
Yeah, they lost to it by 8 in that recent meeting, but they also beat them in Boston on Christmas Day. And that was a game in which we did see, you know, a fully healthy Philadelphia team. And that's what we're going to have this evening. I know that Paul George has been getting injections in his leg. That's not, you know, a great situation. But the fact that he's going to be out there with Tyrese Maxey, with Joel Embiid against the Boston team that has struggled as a road favorite this year, I like the points with Philly. And I also think there's a chance that they win this game outright. I just think that Maxey is a tough matchup for those two defensive guards for the Celtics. Obviously, those guys are very physical. They body up their players, but you have to, you know, stay in front of Maxey, and doing that is very, very difficult. And this is also a Boston team that has struggled to defend centers this year. I can't explain why. I think, you know, they have a really good center group in Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford, but, you know, I think Joel Embiid has the potential to really, you know, play a good game and set the tone for his teammates.
I think you got some of those Celtics players getting a little old possibly, and we're seeing that this year. Zach, I want to go to, I think, the game I'm looking forward to watching the most tonight, and that is the Memphis Grizzlies at the Indiana Pacers, where we will have the highest total of the NBA season, it looks like. A lot of movement on this morning. 249.5 is where we really saw this open up. I saw it get all the way out to 251 this morning before some buyback came back into play. We're around 249.5, 250 in this game. I know you're looking at a side, though, here.
Yeah, I'm laying 2 with Memphis in this game. I just think that their defense is going to be the story in this one. This is a top 10 team in the league defensively, probably closer to top 5, honestly. And I do think that the Pacers, for as good as they have been, you know, since December, they can struggle on the defensive end of the floor. So I'm a little bit worried about how Indiana is going to cover this Memphis team. I'm not really worried about, you know, the other way of that. And I do think this is a game in which Ja Morant is going to light it up a little bit. I don't really think there's a good defensive matchup for him on the Pacers. I am looking at Morant to go over his assist total in tonight's game. He has been doing a really good job as a playmaker lately. And I'm high on this Pacers team, but certain matchups are tough. This is one that I think that, you know, Haliburton could struggle. He really does struggle against elite defenses.
Zach, how about the best team in that Central Division? Cleveland going to New York, taking on Brooklyn. They're laying about 12.5, 13, depending on where you look. Coming out of the break, I mean, look, the Nets, we talked about Philly and how they're trending in the wrong direction. This is a team that should have been tanking, in a lot of people's estimation, from the start of the year. They somehow find a way to win games. Not that they've got a great record, 20-34, but they're playing really competitive basketball. They're good against the number. Can they keep this one close?
I think they are. I got it at 13.5, but I would play it at 12.5. I think this is a really tough spot for Cleveland. They're playing without Dean Wade tonight. Ty Jerome is questionable. And then you have those three all-stars coming back over from California, having to go back to the Brooklyn after, you know, a shorter break than most teams got, playing against a Nets team that has, you know, won and covered in 6 of their last 7 games. I just think this is a really difficult spot for a Cleveland team that was probably looking for a really easy game coming off the break. And while this does look like an easy game on paper, I do think the Nets team has proven to be competitive all year long.
Bulls and Knicks tonight. Knicks laying 12.5 right now. This total is one that Joe and I were discussing earlier. This one's a high one too, 244 for this game between Knicks and Bulls. I know no side or total play here for you, but you're looking at a player prop.
Yeah, I'm playing Matas Puzelis over 17.5 points, rebounds, and assists in this game. I just really like, you know, the uptick in playing time he's gotten lately. He's played at least 26 minutes in six of his last seven games, and the only reason he didn't play 26 in that seventh game is that they lost by like 1,000 in that game against the Pistons. I think that he is going to get a healthy amount of playing time in this game. He's confident as a scorer right now, and I think he can chip in, you know, enough rebounds and assists to get this thing over. It's a very low total for a player that's playing, you know, a good amount of playing time.
Zach, how about this recent Bobby Portis news? The Clippers laying 2 to 2.5 in Milwaukee. Are you going to jump on the Clippers?
I'm thinking about it. I was actually leaning Clippers in that game. I need to look into it a little bit more. I do think that there's a good chance I will end up playing Los Angeles in that one. I just love the way that the Clippers defend, and I think that this Bucks team can be, you know, pretty disastrous offensively when Lillard's not hitting shots.
Zach, do you think this news got out a little early to some people? Is that why we've seen the movement in this game? I was looking hard at the Clippers, too, when they were catching 1.5. Now we've moved all the way to Clippers, too, which I thought was especially odd after we saw Giannis practice yesterday, and it looked like he was maybe trending upwards toward play. I'm wondering if maybe some of this news got out here about Bobby Portis, because I'm with you. This might actually bring me to a play on the Clippers. I don't necessarily love the idea of laying points, but especially if there's a chance Giannis doesn't go, this is a great number, because it's going to fly up from there if Giannis somehow gets ruled out.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's the case. And obviously, if Portis had time to release a statement, he's known about it for a little bit. So I think that people definitely do.
Someone tell me next time. What the hell?
Zach, any thoughts before we wrap it up on this Orlando-Atlanta game? I know Kelly likes to give me a hard time. I'm kind of high on the Hawks right now. I think the Magic have just been in an absolute free fall downward spiral. And, you know, Atlanta had their own little free fall losing 8 in a row. But since then, they've won 4 out of 6. Even in their 2 losses in those 6, they were both by a point. Atlanta put up 125 or more in each of those games. Orlando stinks on the road. I think it's a good spot to take Atlanta money line. What are your thoughts on that contest?
Honestly, I was looking to Orlando hoping that this would be the spot in which Jalen Suggs would return, but seeing him on that injury report makes me want to stay off completely. And if I were to take anything, I'd be with you and I'd back the Hawks. I think that once we see Suggs back for Orlando, that team is going to start to look again like a top five team in the Eastern Conference. So I'm not too worried about them longer term, but I do not know when he's coming back.
Yeah, I feel the same way as you, Zach, but I got to see it a little bit first because it's been ugly. Favorite futures bet, if you had to make one right now, Zach Cohen.
Honestly, I'd go back to DeAndre Hunter, Sixth Man of the Year, because he did come off the bench for Cleveland last game. I think a lot of people were worried about him starting the rest of the season for the Cavaliers. He has been the best Sixth Man in the league this season, so if he does stay in that role the rest of the way, I think he's going to win.
I love it. Zach, appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much for hopping on.
Thanks, guys.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter at BettingOnX, Zach Cohen, VSiN senior editor. I'll tell you what, Kelly, favorite futures bet? I think I'm going to tail one of yours at the break here and place Toronto over 27.5 wins.
Like it.
I love it. More numbers game up next. He's Kelly Bedlin. I'm Joe Cirola.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game continues here on VSiN, taking you through your Thursday morning alongside Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirolo, and I'm excited to hit the progressive guest line here as we welcome in the host of Ready, Set, Bet on VSiN, our friend Mike Somich, to help get us ready for the Four Nations Face-Off Championship game tonight. Mike, how are you, and how excited are you about this championship game?
I'm doing great. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably like a 9.5 for this game tonight. Okay. I cannot wait for the puck to drop, Joe.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Kelly and I were talking earlier during the program about how this game should look a lot different than the last game. Round robin stage, obviously you had the booing of the anthem, and you know Team USA had the group chat fired up about the fights and everything. Look, now you're in the championship game. And I don't think the gloves are going to get dropped early. They might if it's an appropriate situation at some point. But I think right now these teams have one thing on their mind, and that's winning. What do you think is going to be different about this game from the last meeting?
I think quite a bit. I agree with you. I don't expect to see a flurry of fights early in this game. If there is one, it's because a Tkachuk brother decides to just make hay. And, you know, Tkachuk brothers seem to like to do that. So yeah. I wouldn't be overly shocked if one of them steps up and just goes after somebody early in this game. But they're too important, and that's a key part of this, is the USA front and how different this USA team is than in the past. when talking about this game, I don't think a lot of people who are kind of casual hockey fans or casual sports fans fully understand what this rivalry, what this matchup means. If you look in the four major sports, hockey is the one that you have more stars from these two teams, these two countries, than any other sport. Every roster you look at has at least one American, one Canadian, who is just absolutely phenomenal. And when you look at historically how this rivalry has gone, the U.S. is very much the little brother in this rivalry, especially when it comes to best-on-best international competitions. There was a stat that came out. Sidney Crosby had not lost a game in a Canadian sweater in 5,400 days, almost a decade since the last time that he lost wearing the Canadian sweater. And this is the one rivalry where both of these teams just care a little bit more. And when you look at it, this Canadian team is absolutely stacked. They're phenomenal, but there are differences from these previous teams to today's team. One of the main ones is goaltending. If you look at the funnel a decade ago and what was coming up from the Canadian goaltending side, you had Carey Price in net. Prior to that was Patrick Watt. It was just a consistency of phenomenal goaltending for Canada. You fast forward today, that's actually on the U.S. side. You've got Connor Hellebuck. You've got Jake Oettinger, who are the best two goalies in this tournament. Both of them are on Team USA. Canada relying on Jordan Binnington, who has been a phenomenal big game goalie in the past, but not nearly as good as those two goalies and what we've seen from them so far in this tournament. And then you fast forward over to the forward side, where historically Canada just dominant from a forward perspective. If you look at the top 10 scorers in NHL history, all 10 of the Canadians would be number one on the U.S. list. In fact, the leading U.S. scorer would be Brett Hall, who played for Team USA, but he was born in Canada, so he's not even on the list. That's Mike Modano. The difference now, though, is when you look at what we have up front in the USA, you've got both Tkachuks, you've got Jake Eichel, you've got just a phenomenal forward group here that can actually compete skill to skill with Team Canada. So in a lot of ways, today is about Canada trying to prove they are still the big brother. And I guarantee you this generation of Canadian players do not want to be the generation that kind of gives up that dominance. You mentioned the booing of the anthem. Just the political background of this hypes this game up more for these two sides. And we're seeing from a price perspective in Boston, this game is going for as much as the Super Bowl was. So you're going to have just a ton of interest in this game. We've seen the ratings be phenomenal. That USA-Canada game actually outrated two Stanley Cup Finals games last year. So there is interest. And there is going to be buzz and intensity on both of these teams tonight, Joe.
All right, so there's going to be buzz. There's going to be intensity. How does this thing start? Are we going to get a flurry of maybe not fights, but a flurry of goals in the first period? What's your favorite first period play?
I don't think we are. I think this is a situation where it's a lot like a Stanley Cup playoff game. This is a one-and-done single elimination style. That means you're going to see both of these teams tighten up. You do not want to give up the first goal in these games because it is so important to be able to get out to a lead and be able to dominate the style of play and be able to kind of shrink back and play a defensive and attack style of offense. Because of that, I like the first period under here. You can get under a goal and a half, minus 125 in this spot. If you look at the first game, yes, there were two goals in the first period, and the Team USA has scored two in every single period so far, first period in each of these games. So the over is hit for them. Wow. But when you look at how those two teams played the entire game in that round robin game, it was 2-1 before an empty net goal. It was a very much a defensive struggle, and those teams now know how to play each other defensively and know how to play each other with that aspect of it. I think that pushes this toward a defensive matchup, especially early. So I'm going to take the under in the first period, under a goal and a half there. I do like the under for the game, but I get scared in these elimination games in the playoffs and these gold medal or championship games and tournaments, because you're going to see goalies pulled very, very early in this spot. If this is a one-goal game, you're going to see the goalie come out with 2 to 3 minutes. If it's a two-goal game, you'll see the goalie come out with 5 minutes, and that can create havoc for unders late in the game.
Oh, okay. I like that you brought that up, Mike. I was going to ask you about the full game under, so definitely lean there for you. As far as some of those props, like empty net goal, is that something we should be like? That caught my eye a little bit earlier. I mean, I'm still looking for just a fight or penalty minutes prop, even though it sounds like you disagree with me. But I agree that early it might not happen, but throughout the game, I'm still expecting some physicality. But anything else prop-wise that really jumped out to you that you're gravitating towards?
If this game gets out of hand, Kelly, there will be fights. Like, it will happen here. Yeah. So if you see either team get up 2-3 goals, if you can get an in-game fight prop, I'm all about that, because the wider the margin, the more likely you're to see a fight here. If you do see a fight early, I think it's the first 5 minutes. You can get a fight in the first 5 minutes at plus 150. That's kind of fun to root for, just to see if you do get either of these teams to drop the gloves. From a prop perspective, my favorite one here is Cal Makar to get 3+ shots in the game, sitting at plus 120. He's a big key of this. I mean, you have, from the round robin to this game, you have two big differences. So first off, McAvoy out for Team USA. He was one of their top defensemen. He was a specific problem for Connor McDavid, who's the top forward over on Team Canada. And then Cal Makar reinserted the lineup. He missed that game against the USA with illness. If you look at his two games in the tournament that he has played, he's attempted at least 10 shots in both of those games. Now, not all of them got on goal, and that's the key here. You have to have shots on goal to be able to cash this prop. But he's had two or three shots wide, 4 shots in both games blocked. He is going to be firing the puck. The question is, are you able to get those pucks to the net? I think he's going to have some success here being able to do that. And he's also a difference maker in this Canadian offense, because when you watch that game against Team USA in the first round, their real struggle was breaking out of the zone with speed, breaking through the neutral zone with speed. Cal Makar single-handedly is able to do that, either carrying the puck or passing the puck. So I look for him to have a big game tonight if Team Canada wins. I definitely think he goes over that shot total at 3 or more at plus 120. And you can get a big number if you want to go 4 or more shots as well. So I don't hate that if you're looking for a big price.
Yeah, if you've got the courage, we'll say, to go 4 or more, you can get 3-1 on that for Makar. I don't hate that. I mean, you're asking for, what, 40% of his overall shot attempts to be on goal at that 4+ alt line, 3-1. Not bad. How about goalie props? Mike, you talked about the goaltending and how Team USA, for the first time in a long time, seemingly has a pretty clear advantage in that category. Are you going to Hellebuck, or are you going to the Canadian side of things?
Well, I'm looking at shots and specifically saves that we're going to see from both of these goalies, and I expect you're going to see Canada spend more time in the offensive zone here. If you just look how the USA roster is constructed, they made decisions to go with less talented players on specifically the third and fourth line than what they could have, because they wanted a more cohesive unit as a team. They wanted a grinding line out there, a defensive line that can face off against some of these Canadian players. Those lines don't generate a lot of shots in most cases. And because of that, I like Jordan Binnington under saves, under 25 and a half saves in the game. He's actually gone under this total in all three games, with 23, 20, and 23 saves in each of those. If Team Canada is able to push this offense, which I expect they do, you're not going to see nearly as many USA shots. I'm not saying USA loses the game. I just think Canada outshoots them, and it's not as busy of a night for Jordan Binnington. So let's take his under shots prop here at 25 and a half saves.
Mike, I love the props, but I do have to ask you at the end of the day, and we won't tell Dave Ross if you're picking against Team USA, but who do you think ultimately wins this one?
I think Team Canada wins, unfortunately. I'm kind of torn here. I have a lot of Team Canada to win the championship here. I talked about this last week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on VSiN, how you had to bet Team Canada at plus 190 or plus 200 to win this tournament, because they were highly likely to be in the championship game. And if they were, you're going to see minus 110 on both sides, just like we saw in the round robin game. So I've got a lot of exposure to Canada here. I do think they are top to bottom the better team. And I think Cal Makar makes that big of a difference for this Team Canada side. They weren't able to get speed through the neutral zone. They weren't able to get speed out of their own zone. That's going to change with Makar on the ice. And he's going to be on the ice with McKinnon and McDavid. And when they get speed through the neutral zone, they become nearly impossible to stop for a full game. So I think Team Canada wins it, but I do think we're in for a good game tonight.
Yeah, I remember you saying that on Money Moves last Friday, and that made me lean towards Team Canada myself in this one. I'm with you. We'll have to keep that a secret from Dave, but I'm with you. Mike, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much, man.
You got it. Have a good one, guys.
Make sure you check out Ready, Set, Bet over the weekend and follow him at SamoBomb18 on Twitter. Kelly, which side are you leaning towards in this one?
Man, I'm rooting USA. Let's go red, white, and blue.
I didn't say who you're rooting for. I said which side are you leaning,
all
right?
I have no idea.
Don't make me seem like an expatriate or something on air.
I'm leaning over fights. That's what I'm leaning.
That's what we're leaning for. In the sports book or on the ice?
Yeah, both.
More numbers game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo. Up next.